Institute. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
It is season 5 of Dishing It Out. We're back at it with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
So it's been a while. We kind of wrapped up before Christmas with season 4. And true to form, became award winners. Irish Food Writers podcast of the year, and we did what everybody does when they win awards. We stopped making the show that won the award. So obviously the Marker and the K Club are just crazy over the festive period, and then we were a wee bit slow to kind of get off the ground, but we are back at it. We've already got a couple of decent interviews in the can, and we have a couple coming up. It's brilliant to be back. I'm buzzing. It's actually a lovely feeling today. We were in here waving knives, headphones and microphones at one another for a wee rebrand and a photo shoot to freshen.
Yeah, waving knives in a nice way. Look,
oh yeah, waving knives in as nicely as you could wave a knife at someone's face. That's what we were doing. But it's brilliant to be back. Ed Sheff is back in the producer seat over there.
Yeah, we signed the contract last minute. The Mo Salah of this podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. He was going to go out to the Middle East.
He has done a Mo Salah and a Van Dijk and stayed.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's great to have the full squad here back together. So, Gareth, we finished up around November, I think. Actually, the last day we recorded, we went to the Food Writers Guild Awards dinner. And the Food Writers dinner at the RDS, and we won podcast of the year in the food and drink category, which was amazing. We were there, we had a dinner, about 120 people of the who's who in Irish food. And then not long after that, we had, and I don't want to miss this because you won big on the night. I got to cook the Good Food Ireland dinner, and I don't think we were on air after that either. Really? No, we weren't. And so there's been plenty happening in your world, in my world, since then, I presume.
Well, the plan was always to take December off because we were so busy, and then we decided to give January a rest as well. And then just between the jigs and the reels, there's been so much going on. I mean, we've reopened the rooftop on the hotel, which is it's taken 6 months worth of work really gone into that to get it up and running again. But I've missed the podcast, I have to say.
Yeah, so did I. So did I, yeah. And I saw from socials actually that the rooftop was back. A bit of a refurb, but different parts of the hotel was getting done in sections. And obviously the rooftop was the latest one. And you scored blessed with the launch. Did you get an invite to the launch yet? Because I know I didn't.
Funnily enough, no.
Mix.
No.
I mean,
I was
this
probably
guy,
you know, working on the pod.
Also, so this is the road we're taking.
It's movement. Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, would you ever think to leave out one of the boys in the podcast when you're launching your big night? I met Claire Darmody, producer of Pat Kenny. I work with her in the Anton Show for years. I know her really well. One of the first things she says, oh, I was at the Marker last Wednesday night for the launch party.
Claire wasn't there.
Well, she was. She was at the Marker. And I says, oh, you got the invite, did you? And I says, oh, yeah. Yeah, still waiting on mine, you know. He doesn't leave Dublin and he doesn't know how to send invites out of Dublin either, it seems.
Okay, so I'm getting forced into the corner here. So both of you are more than welcome to come to the room.
Oh, thank you so
whenever
much.
Whenever you want to. Thanks. Yeah.
We'll do an episode from down there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go.
No, we should. It's actually Cassie Stokes did, we both did an interview with Cassie early last year, actually, from the rooftop. It wasn't tropical temperatures like it was for the night of the reopening, but I'll tell you, it can be gorgeous there or catch you in a windy day, but it's a glass place.
From the foodie side of things, I'm doing kind of like a Asian food up there. And when we decided to do that kind of style of food up there, like Asian taste plates, it was just going to be all Thai food. But as I kind of get into it then, there's a little bit of Japanese and a bit of Korean. But I forgot how much I love cooking that type of food. And I suppose that's kind of another thing that you, as a chef, you'll go back to different times in your career where you'll have different styles and, you know.
Well, it really suits the space.
It does. And like even like spicy food when you're outside really works for some reason. I don't know why that is. But and even with the mixologists have done an amazing job on the drinks. They've really done it. They actually do it. There's a drink up there called Love and Bananas.
Mm.
And it's kind of a hat tip to where Thai influence. So Anantara, the brand I work for, originally started out in Thailand. And they have a scheme where they help look after elephants over in Asia. So that was a hat tip to that. So, you know yourself, Gary, when you're creating something, at the start, you think, oh, am I going in the right direction?
Yeah.
And then you start really buying into it. But then you have to sit with it before anybody gets to see it. So, like, you know, it was 6 months in the making, really, where yeah. we were testing the recipes, you know, obviously buying new croc.
And then you're not eating them in the sunshine outside in the fresh air either. So you got to try and bring yourself. And what you say there is really right, like about having the right type of food in the right place. And that's whenever you're tasting as well, you've got to try and bring yourself. Do you know, recently I did a tasting with Paul, as you know, like, I mean, obviously Ludo or whoever you go, there's always one or two that you'll run through, the boss. And there were a couple of class dishes, you know what I mean? But Paul was like, no, it's the wrong place. But on reflection, I was looking at it going, do you know what? You're actually bang on. Like, the dishes are brilliant, but I'm doing them for the wrong space.
Right.
They were perfect for South, not for the Henry Lounge and so on and so forth. So just when you were saying there about, you know, I saw images of the dishes and that, you know, I saw these wee dumplings. I thought, oh, yeah. That's, and honest to God, not just saying, because you know I love slagging you, and I'd love to be able to tell you that you've made a hems of it.
Do you know that?
But I saw photographs from last week's opening night and pictures of the dishes, and then you had a photo shoot up there too, and I thought, no, good man, that's exactly what I want to be dabbling in there. Order 4 or 5 things, get a good gander at 4 or 5 different little bits and pieces.
What we've noticed is people are coming in and they're just grazing, you know, like they've got dishes, a couple of cocktails.
And still going downstairs for dinner or moving on or a bit of everything.
We're only a few weeks into it, so exactly. But the idea is, and even from the kitchen setup, as the food is ready, we send it. So we don't send it in courses. So look, it's a different way to come at it. My team are enjoying
cooking it.
All the different ingredients. And I've actually done a couple of dishes that I haven't cooked since I lived in Australia.
So have you a new kitchen up there on the roof?
We just kind of upgraded it a little bit. Yeah, put some new fridges into it and some new equipment. And
how many chefs to be up there then? Like two chef operation.
There's only two of them, yeah.
Yeah, there's so probably only room for a couple. You got to be smart. A lot of mise en place, heavy dishes, and then bang, bang, bang.
All the work happens downstairs and then they just go upstairs for service. That's kind of similar to what goes on down the K Club. So there's like a production kitchen downstairs and then it goes to satellite kitchens. That's
depends on the venue,
and how's all down the K Club?
Brilliant. Yeah, obviously the season's rightly underway. I mean, I don't know, I say the season, but the winter is my first winter there, and it didn't feel like an off season, I can tell you.
When
that
did,
you know,
we do
it's
the,
busy.
You were down there for the Eurotalk AGM
February 28th, and the 24th of February.
That's a handy enough dinner to cook, isn't it, having all the Eurotalk chefs down there?
Yeah, the creme de la creme. But that went really, I was actually really proud to be able to host it and have it there.
It was,
you know,
beautiful meal.
It was magic to have, you know, the chefs of the caliber that was there in the room, and hoteliers and people that are involved in Eurotalks there that day for the meeting, and then that night for the dinner and to stay over. And you know, it's funny, like, I don't stay in the K Club too often, you know what I mean? Like, but that night I did stay over, you know what I mean? Like, I had one or two drinks with the crew afterwards, and it was around 12:30. I bowed out early enough, and I had a long day. But I went up the stairs at reception, and it was like 12:30 going on 12:45, and there was this open fire on the land. And I was like, going, God, you know, I wander here and there every now and again, but I have no real reason to be going up that staircase at the front reception foyer. So I never knew that there was an open fireplace in this big sort of open, wide open foyer, nearly the same size.
Oh, you were a guest?
And I was a guest, and I felt like a guest, and I was standing, I was like going, so about 10 or 15 minutes, I just chilled, enjoyed the open fire, because obviously it was still the winter weather.
Sat down and told yourself how good of a job you'd done.
Well, I sat down and told myself
was there a mirror that you were like, how, pat yourself in the back?
How fortunate I felt to be working there. Do you know, like, every now and again, you're like going, geez, this place is class. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so gorgeous. And the dinner had gone well. Like, you always know with chefs, like, if they're just kind of telling you, it was one of them wee pat on the backs, like, and they're like, Jesus, some of them courses were.
I cooked that dinner a couple of times, so I know the.
Yeah.
It's all your peers and your friends, and everyone in the room knows an awful lot about food. So if you weren't nervous, there'd be something wrong.
Yeah, there'd be something wrong. Yeah, so I really was.
It's like cooking for all the who's who that are in. That, you know,
it must be intimidating.
It is intimidating.
Oh yeah, it is, because I've sat, and I'm not like that, but I have sat at awards nights where people are actually really judged. And I'm talking now, say the restaurant of the year dinner for the REI. Like, I've cooked that dinner. Me and Gareth have cooked it together, actually, and we've cooked it with other chefs. I remember
Hold on. I'm going to correct you there. I cooked the main course. Gary Mack.
Oh, yeah. I did, of course.
He knew. We were called in for the meeting and we're all sitting around the table. And the guy that was organising it goes, okay, so we're allocating courses now. And he was the quickest out of a chair. I'll do the soup. And I was like, Jesus, he was quick to say that. And then someone else was in with the dessert, someone done the starter, and he was just sniggering across the table.
Is the soup obviously the easier?
Yeah, man, you had a bleeding pot of soup. I had to do it.
I ate some shitty soup at the REI dinner over the years.
I remember
the
soup that you made. You'd done it.
But anyway, going back to
spiced cauliflower, isn't it?
Yeah, there's about 1,400 people at it. Now, one of the ones we were doing, there was 1,150 booked. Halfway through the day, they said, listen, lads, it's gone up a bit. Yeah. There's 1,360. I was like, here. Going up a bit is like 10 people. Yeah. It went up hundreds. Jeez. Mental. But I've been at those dinners and people are talking about the course and they're like, oh God, like, why would you be so...
They're proper...
And I'm looking at them going like, well, you're never going to be cooking it, like, and you're talking like that. So, like, they can be judgy, you know what I mean? So you are nervous. Now, it was a smaller affair, the Eurotux one, but I mean, might have been a smaller affair, but the caliber of cooks had a far bigger reach in the world of, you know,
stars. You don't have to name any names now, but is there one particular chef that you see walking in the door going, fuck?
No, it's the collection.
Is one that you go,
he done this show, I'll give you a bit of price. He done this dish that I've heard you talking about for years and years. Oh. And every time I've heard you talking about it, I always go, wonder would that work? And it was the quail cordon bleu.
Cheeky you, would it work?
But you know, because
the quail cordon bleu, yeah.
Absolute cracker. And you know who I was sitting beside, and the two of us were, a good friend of ours, Graham Neville, was sitting beside me. He was like, Jesus, the flavour he's after getting into that. And the quail breast was cooked perfectly, and the leg was stuffed. It was really delicious.
Yeah.
He started us off with an oyster, and then we had venison, the meat for main course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finished with
carrot and parsnip.
Carrot and parsnip. Ooh, dessert.
Yeah. I went very funky with dessert.
Oh, and when I seen it, I was like,
yeah. So years and years ago, right? Mario Batali, who was cancelled a few years ago, but Mario Batali is one of the biggest chefs in the world. Work with Marco.
What do you mean he was cancelled?
Yeah, a few years ago, like he got in trouble, like about how he was treating staff. Oh. I mean, he's huge in America. Like, I'm talking, he's the biggest chef America has ever produced, like Italian American. On Del Posto in New York is one of the most famed restaurants in the world. And many, many moons ago, I went to Del Posto and just on a recce trip in New York. I was young, like I was early 20s, whatever. And it was like carrot and parsnip was on the menu. And I went, jeez, it goes. And I used to love putting twists on, say, like a trifle. Like I would do like a coffee trifle. I loved picking like an old school dessert or an old school dish and putting a modern twist on it. Now I'm talking a modern twist, but this was like now 20 something years ago, right? And I had this dish on in one of my restaurants in Boston. It was carrot and parsnip, but it was just a basic carrot cake and a parsnip ice cream that we made, a parsnip ice cream like with vanilla bean juice and parsnips mixing in with the, you know, the milk and everything else, and then turned into ice cream. Because it's quite sweet, it makes a gorgeous flavoured ice cream. It really, really works. But for the Eurotux dinner, I brought in a better pastry chef than me, Fernando, who works at the K Club. I just talked through the layers and the detail and the idea that I wanted into it, and he recreated it.
It's so, kind of like AI for chefs, right? When you have a fella of the talent Gary has, you can just say to him, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to do this, and then this dessert appears on the plate.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
It's incredible. Like, it is an art.
Yeah. And like, I wouldn't be able to, I can think of it, right? When it comes to patisserie, it's more of the time. I mean,
This is about the most executive chef thing that he's ever said on this show.
Yeah, but it's true. Like, I mean, I wouldn't have the talent of Fernando in patisserie. Like, but then he mightn't have the mind that I have to come up with the idea. But that's the beauty of... I always say about kitchens, right? You don't build a team of strikers.
Yeah.
You've got a goalkeeper, a centre half, a centre midfielder and a striker. And you've got to have the right people in the right place, from financials to creativity to grafters to whatever. And Fernando is that. And I used to have Sammy when I was in Viewmount House, and she was incredible too. But Sammy could... She never wrote a menu or never thought of a dish in her whole career. But if you sit with her and you start talking through texture, what you want it to look like. So muck about, might get it right the first time, tweak something, make that harder, make that softer, add more colour, more vanilla, more sweet, more sour. Comes back a second time and you're getting closer and closer. But for the Eurotokes dinner, the carrot and parsnip was just,
that was a cracker.
It was amazing. And then you had like the coolness of winter, root vegetables in season, carrot and parsnip as a dessert. And like for chefs, you're like going, oh, that's a talking point. You know what I mean? You're like going, right, well, what's going to come out for that course? You know what I mean? So it went well. I mean, thank God it went well.
No,
you know,
well.
Yeah, but it did. It was cracking.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice to get.
How long are you a year in the Kaikoura?
Longer now, yeah, just over a year and a few months now. Yeah, it seems to have gone quick, you know.
Yeah, should we remember when you started?
Because I was in France for a long time when we started the podcast.
Right,
and
yeah.
And so, yeah, the whole K-Club journey has been happened live through this prism, you know. And what about anything else going on at the marker then?
No, really, it's about the same as you. Like, it's about just getting ready now for a busy, you know, our banqueting. Or our corporate side of the business slows down and like you really move now into towards leisure guests. So the pace of the hotel kind of slows down a little bit. Like that restaurant being very busy at 7 o'clock in the morning where people are down for breakfast. Sops, it starts to move now till 8, 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. So, you know, I think maybe from the outside looking in, you mightn't think about that, you know, you have to kind of change the structure of how it's set up and everything needs to run a little bit later and a little bit slower. And obviously the residence bars tend to go a little bit later now because people are sitting around and
they're not working, they're enjoying themselves. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And then obviously we have the rooftop open and the restaurant is nice and busy. No. So it's good. Grand Canal in Dublin really changes as a space. Like, It wouldn't be unusual to look out onto the square and you see a dance class going on out there in the middle of the afternoon. It's really cool.
It's a cool spot, that square
When your pal was over and stayed, we went for dinner. From America.
Samba.
Yeah. Well, that was Christmas.
Yeah, it could have been. He's been back a few times.
He was saying to me, like, when you're in the hotel and you look out onto the square, you wouldn't think you're in Dublin, like, you know.
Yeah.
But in the summer now, it really comes to life. So it's a nice part of town to work in.
Yeah, because I was down there, actually. You hosted the Good Food Ireland conference this year. And I was on one of the panels there. Like, so in between them, I popped out, actually, to make a few work calls. And it was a gorgeous sunny day that day, as you might remember. You probably had a photo shoot outside. But there's something cool about that space. And obviously, that's where all the... They call them the duck tours in Boston, as the Viking tours they call them here.
Yeah,
it's called the Boston duck tours. Like, but I'd love to do that. The duck tour in Boston, man. I lived there for years and I only done it.
Have you ever done it?
I've done it twice. It is the absolute crack,
isn't it?
It's such a great addition. And if you've got people coming over, it's a great addition.
Thankfully, people aren't saying this too much anymore. But during COVID, that business actually fell away.
Oh yeah,
and they only got it back up and running again, and I was delighted to see it coming back.
Because
when you're up on the rooftop and you're looking down, you can actually hear the microphone.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, and
the
tour guides do such a great job. Like
that's the one that they scream at people. Going,
yeah.
Do you know? Over the years, I've gone to Ackle and had this old dude did a tour guide over there.
I love doing.
Unbelievable, right? Not Ackle. They one of the Iron Islands. Sorry, Iron Islands. The Boston tour, the duck tour. I got blessed with a guy on the duck tour, and there was another one then, Martha's Vineyard. Oof. I did one on Martha's Vineyard. There's so much history there too, especially with the Kennedys, Jaws, all of that stuff. But the tour guides, man, make it. Like, if you get a good one on your bus or whatever it
any
is.
Any city
going
I go to, first thing I do is open top bus tour.
Yeah.
Straight up. I don't care if it's cheesy. It's an amazing way to see the city.
Yeah.
I did London there only a couple of months ago, Edinburgh, Lisbon. Anywhere I go, I'm like, I'm gone for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And you get around the city just as quick.
And that's you get an awful lot in a short span of time too, don't you?
And you know, the other thing, if you're doing it, is keep an eye out for the restaurants. So just take a little snap of the restaurants as you're going around, because they don't always give hat tips to them, but you know, boy, from the outside looking in, you'll see a restaurant on
good
the street.
Good shout. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
But the Dublin one is great crack, and then they end up in the near you.
Yeah, then the base.
And they just go around the. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they just go into the water and they. It's from World War II, I think.
Summer now, you'll see all the UNFLAs diving in.
That's right.
A little bit of the local colour.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of the local colour.
Do you know, it was a good few years ago now, they released a statement to say that because there was people giving out that it was like antisocial behaviour, which I actually didn't agree with, all these kids jumping into the water. But somebody across one of the news platforms said there was a skin-eating disease in the basin, and it stopped them. Literally overnight stopped the kids from jumping into the water.
Is that it?
And it was total spoof. So all it done was it pushed them around onto the Samuel Beckett.
Oh, yeah.
And they were jumping off the Samuel
Because it doesn't travel that far. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Because that's different water.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's more north side. Yeah. No, it's such a gorgeous vibe down there, especially as you say. There's always something going on.
Yeah, yeah,
and then when the Bord Gáis is coming in and out and some great little restaurants. Yeah, it's like a nice old vibe down there, I have to say, yeah.
Well, maybe not a lot of people know this, but Ross Lewis is cooking over in Estrella Luce now.
Oh, yeah.
So Ross was the head chef of Chapter One for 20 years, where he had a Michelin star. And he owned this small little restaurant up in across from the hotel, Estrella Luce, it's called. And when Ross moved out of the way and Mick started cooking in Chapter One, Ross went in and started cooking in Estrella. And he's there all the time. And I had dinner there around Christmas time. And the pastas in there are as good as anywhere in Ireland, I'd say. Like, absolutely incredible. So if you're looking for...
I've eaten there a few times. It's beautiful.
It was beautiful. Like, really, 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 really good. And Peter Bourne is cooking in there right now,
is he? Is he?
That's where
Peter is. Wow.
So very high caliber cooking going on down in Grand Canal.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Yeah.
We look after you.
Insert jokes right there.
Yeah.
Right, that's us for an opener. I think it's moving on to conundrum time.
So it's that part of the show is back. We throw over to Ed Chef, where he gives us our culinary conundrums.
Absolutely delighted to be back doing them. And thanks to everyone. I opened up the old mailbox and it was stuffed with people in right panics.
Right.
So hopefully you're still around. Starting off with James in Arklow. All right, lads, so great to have you both back. The podcast has been sorely missed. Now to my conundrum. I foolishly attempted a risotto over the weekend and it ended up more like savoury porridge. What am I doing wrong? Too much stock? Wrong rice? Help me redeem myself. James, in a bit of trouble with his risotto.
Yeah, you probably already answered your question, James. So it's first of all, you need the correct rice. So arborio or cannelloni are two rices. So it's basically a short grain rice that you need. And then I'll explain it again. I'm sure we've explained it before, but there's a process for making risotto. So first of all, you need the rice. Then you're going to finely chop some shallot or some onion. You'll saute that off in a little bit of olive oil, maybe a little bit of garlic. Mm-hmm. I like to put celery in mine as well, a very finely, really finely chopped celery. And then this bit is quite important. You throw the rice in then and you toast the rice on the heat in the olive oil. And what that does is just it helps the rice take on the flavour or whatever's in there. So, and then the next part, which is quite important, is you're going to deglaze that rice with a little bit of wine. And I've shared this on here before, definitely, that when I learned how to make risotto for the first time, the Italian fellow that was teaching me says, risotto, rice is born in water, so it must die in wine.
Oh, wow.
And that stayed with me for my whole career. And any time I teach people how to make risotto, I throw that in. So you throw the wine in when the rice disappears.
You don't remember my reaction the first time he said that, Ed. I thought it was the best line.
It should be
a tattoo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It should be on your gravestone.
Exactly. So what then you do is you just start feeding it with hot stock. So if it's a chicken risotto or a veal risotto or a vegetable risotto. And then you just keep feeding it until you need to cook the rice till it'll start off that it's really chalky, but you bring it to a point where it just has a small bite or al dente. You take it off the heat and the last process then you're going to feed it with lots of butter and parmesan cheese. Let it rest for a little bit. When you pour the rice onto a plate, the rice should fall. I think that's a common mistake for a home cook. They make it that it's too thick. So a risotto rice should be quite loose. So when you put it onto the plate, it should just
kind of crumbly.
Yeah. Well, more kind of
like lava,
liquidy.
Like it should
just
like
I know what you mean. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll know before you even eat some risotto whether it's overcooked because it'll sit up on the plate. And that's it. I mean, it is a skill. There's loads of YouTube videos on how to make risotto, but it's the type of thing that once you learn, you kind of won't forget, like, you know, so you just need to figure it out for the first time. But choosing the rice, making sure that you have hot stock, making sure you're throwing a splash of vino into it at the start because it needs a little.
And you only got to add the stock small bit by small bit. Yeah, as it sucks it up, you feed it in another little tiny quarter of a ladle. Splash, splash, splash. If you go in with too much stock and you leave it thinking that you're going to get the volume right, you won't. You've got to feed it in bit by bit. Let it take up all the stock. If it's not cooked, another little bit.
It takes
not cooked,
20 odd minutes and you have to stand there with it.
And you cannot do it fast. You've got to let it take its time.
It sounds like he was doing the stock wrong, putting too much.
But at the same time, depending on what his texture of porridge is, he shouldn't be too far off.
Okay.
The texture shouldn't be that far off.
Sounds to me like he was using basmati, but anyway.
There you go, James, let us know. We're going from Arklow down to Cork. Miranda Daly. Gareth, Gary, straight in. She's not messing. Help settle a bet between myself and my know-all husband. What's the actual difference between a hand blender and a food processor? Do I need both, or is it just that gadget madness?
You don't really need both, but a hand blender is just so much handier to have for lots of stuff.
Boom, boom.
Whether it's finishing a sauce or finishing a soup, it's just faster, and they will do the exact same thing.
Oh, really?
But a hand blender is just quicker, more efficient.
For a home cook, I think it's the...
Yeah, and it's also safer. The food processors, when you put them up, they're generally on top of a motor and they're sitting high. You pour in hot soup. They can very easily become top heavy because most of them don't lock in. Now, Thermomix is a lock in, but most food processors that you're buying are not locked in. They're locked in a little bit, but they're still top heavy. And they will do the same thing. But the hand blender will just save you so much more time and mess and hassle. And if you're going to buy one or the other, hand blender every time. That simple.
Well,
that's agreed.
Both of
you. It's a handier gadget to own at home. So, but you're now at all husband.
I don't know who's winning here. I hope it's Miranda. Yeah. Cork will win something this year. Dear Gary and Gareth, welcome back. And let me tell you, your return is just in time for my first season as a serious barbecuer. Our first barbecue conundrum.
Right out of blocks.
Here we go. So talk to me about veggies on the grill. My daughter has just become a vegetarian and I want to include her, obviously. I tried the usual bell peppers, etc. But is there anything else actually nice to do with courgettes, or are they just for the Instagram shot? Cheers, Stephen Maloney in Westmeath. Any suggestions for veggies on the grill?
I think the key is, like most barbecuing, is about the sauces that you're going to serve with them and the little bit of marinating that's going to have to happen. But like a ratatouille skewer, if you like, so your carrot, courgette, tomato, red onion, and then if you marinate all those veg and like a little bit of olive oil, maybe a little bit of rosemary, some garlic, just some salt and pepper, and if that's grilled correctly and you let the veg caramelize a little bit and then serve it with a pesto, absolutely fantastic when it comes off. Or I mean, there'd be nothing stopping you barbecuing a whole cauliflower. Where
can you barbecue any veg, or is that...
Well, the best thing in the world to barbecue is corn, like make elotes, which is Mexican street corn. You just put the corn on raw.
Is that the dish where you brush it in mayonnaise?
Yeah, you char it black, like all the way around. And actually, if you want to start it in the husk, soak it in cold water in the husk, put the whole husk on, it'll act as a steam chamber.
The husk is the leaves, can't
yeah,
be right?
That's yeah, is all the leaves that are wrapped around the corn, the sweet corn that comes straight from the field. Put it on as it cooks, then that'll start to open out and dry, and then it'll get to the point where it'll actually just disintegrate. Your corn will be half cooked by that stage. Then you want to char the outer part of the corn, so get it nice and black, not burnt, but it's blackened, you know what I mean, like you're grilling a good char, grilling a steak, same idea with the corn. Get it black all the way over, cook through. You're going to brush it with mayonnaise, then you're going to dust it with smoked paprika, then you're going to roll it in crumbed aged parmesan.
Oh my god.
And I'm telling you now, you've never...
Do you know what, this is my first one back, and again I've made the mistake of not eating
before.
Oh lad, sorry, I would have to edit.
Elotes is the nicest vegetable that you will ever make on a barbecue or a dry white hot pan. Char it black, brushed mayonnaise, smothered with smoked paprika, and then roll it in crumbled aged Parmesan. It'll all stick to it. And you can actually flick a little bit of lime juice over the top of it before you eat it. Gorgeous, man.
Jesus, that sounds incredible.
I'm going to do that this weekend.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Final one from Nadine in Wicklow. Sorry for hitting you with such a basic and stupid one. No, Nadine, there's no such thing as a basic and stupid question on the conundrums. I take care of that. But how do you stop spuds from going gluey when you mash them? Mine always turn into paste, no matter what I do. Any help, greatly appreciated. We've had a few mash questions over the years on this, but Nadine's are turning out too pasty.
There's a couple of problems. She's either choosing the wrong potato, which is, I'd say, what's going on here, especially at this time of year. Like the new season potatoes, some of them aren't great for mashing. You're better off just steaming them and having them with loads of butter. Or another thing that can happen is if you start them off too low, like you need to bring potatoes up to a simmer and then let them simmer. If you try and boil potatoes too slowly, it tends to get them a little bit gluey. And then if you make sure that they're cooked, so if you try and mash them before they're actually nice and tender, that can also make them a little bit gluey.
And if you let them go too cool between finishing the cooking and mashing them, they get super gluey.
Oh.
So she could be making the spuds. You also, you know, I've often talked about teaming them. If you cook them in jackets, put them back on, or not in jackets, like put them either way, they got to go back on the heat after you drain out the water. Make sure you start from cold water, never ever hot water. If it grows down into the ground, you must start cooking it in cold water. Otherwise, the outside's going to cook too fast before the inside's cooked, and then it gets overcooked, which could be causing gloopiness and glueiness, right? There's a lot of starch in the potato. But cover with cold water, salt it really well, boil it rapidly, then turn it down. But I say a simmer, but a rapid simmer until it's cooked through with a soft butter knife goes through it. Off, drain, spuds back in the pot, back on a low to medium heat. Make sure you're giving the pot a wee tap every now and again. That'll flour them and fluff them. Let the water or the steam evaporate. You'll start seeing them flour on the outside and drying. And when you start seeing them drying, you're going to get a really good mash, because a dry potato really, really like helps when it comes to getting rid of moisture. If you see floury potatoes, it means that you've got rid of loads of moisture, which means you're going to have a really good clean mash. But
you can feed it with more butter and cream.
Yeah, and then you can just feed it with butter only. Actually, I don't even touch it with cream or whatever, just only butter, white pepper, and salt. If you want it to be nicer, if you're going to use anything, use cream. I just do butter. It's like pretty much butter to potato.
You put milk in?
No, no way. Absolutely never milk. Absolutely never.
I hear that in the card.
No, absolutely never ever put wet milk on potatoes. Like a splash of really good heavy cream, yes. No problem. But generally the best potatoes is only butter as your only binder, white pepper and fine sea salt after they've been dried and teamed, and make sure you mash them when they're still piping hot. If you let them cool in any way at all, glue.
That's kind of
I bet 3 or 4 times there between him and me, that person went, oh, I do that. Shit, I do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I drain them. I leave them for half an hour. Go and do something else.
There's nothing worse like when you'd see someone that's at the peeling like a 20 kilo bag of spuds, and then they do any of those things. They put them, we use a thing in the kitchen called.
And there's no salvaging them, is there? Not really.
No.
I just have to
start again.
Yeah, start again. Yeah. But you know, a commie might have left them go a little bit cold, and then they're trying to put them through the mill.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, no, service is about to start.
You know, like a chef will see that like from 50 feet away going, come here.
Snookered.
What have you done?
Right, lads, all of us come around, start peeling spuds quick.
Get the spuds
on. It's risotto today.
Let's do it. Boost that table, give him a sorbet. We need to try and find 10 minutes here.
Well, listen, thanks to everyone who sent in their conundrums. There was loads waiting for us. We'll have more in the next episode.
But actually, while you're there, Ed, I was actually thinking, we discussed this though. Anybody wants to send us in a voice note even for the good conundrums? Chance. Feel free to either send them into my Instagram, Gar Mullins, or Gary's
at Gaza Chef.
Or indeed,
we would love to hear your beautiful voices.
Yeah, because we got a lot of love on the last series from people, but we'd love to hear your voices. Yeah. And we'll everybody will hear your voices. Send us in a voice note.
Yeah, speak your conundrums. Get them in. That's a good shout. And also, if you want to email them as well, oldschoolfood@goaloutnow.com. Get them in and we'll get them out. Thanks, Gary.
Oh, he didn't have such a radio voice as Tammy.
Oh, sorry.
He's getting a wee bit more podcasty at last.
Hold on,
food@goaloutnow.com. He usually makes a hams of it.
Here we go. Don't forget get your conundrums into us at food@goaloutnow.com.
There he is. He's back.
Ooh, you never lose it.
So, seeing as how it's just the two of us on this pod, I thought it might be nice, Gary, to first of all ask you, what would your last meal be? Because we get to ask our lovely guests every week, and we've never asked one another. And don't you worry, Ed, you're going to be getting this question too. So
I will be very boring with this, right? Or maybe you'll like it, but it's the hat trick for me. Duck confit, right? Aged sirloin steak.
Sirloin.
Or halibut. Sirloin steak is just, it's the daddy of all cuts for me. Always has been. A dry aged 10, even a cut it myself, I'd even go 14 ounce Johnstone sirloin steak. Nice and thick as myself, with a nice rested pink medium. An East Orange cured duck leg confit with beetroot, mushroom, sherry and tarragon ragout.
That's that dish that I had at the...
Yeah, Good Food Ireland Good dinner. Food That's the starter. I've been cooking that a long time. And then a creme brulee, a ginger vanilla bean creme brulee with a sable biscuit for dessert. Do you know, me and Garrod, obviously are a good buddy that owns the Old Post. Me and Jerry and Tara, way back in the 90s.
Jerry is Garrod.
Jerry is Garrod.
Made true another name.
So Garrod is really Jerry. So me and Jerry and Tara would have picked a restaurant and we'd all take turns of treating each other over the years. But there isn't a restaurant that ever cooked a duck confit in Ireland that I hadn't eaten in over all those years. If duck confit's on the menu, I'm having it. If creme brulee's on the menu, I'm having it. And definitely the best brulee I ever had was in a wee restaurant in Galway that was really, really short-lived. It was called The Archway. It was a French dude that worked for Larousse Foods, opened it for a while. Between 1999 and 2000 it would have been open, you know, like, and I don't know how long it lasted, but it was exceptional when it was open. I had a creme brulee in there, a few other things as well, but the bread basket that night I'll remember forever, and the creme brulee. And Cook's Cafe in Dublin, it was a Johnny Cook, like back in the 90s. I remember eating a duck confit one night in Cook's Cafe that I'll just never ever forget. It was perfect, you know. And I do a mean duck confit myself. I take a lot of pride in it. I love it. I think it's a great way of cooking. It's really about manipulating flavor. You know, the curing process, the salting process is so intricate to getting it right. And, you know, people look at dishes like that and they think, oh, you know, they're handy, they're simple. And I'm like, do you know what?
Handy to get wrong.
There is so much skill involved in getting a duck confit perfect. You know, if you've had the fat for 5 or 6 rounds, you got to say to yourself, I've had the salt in there, I've had the orange in there, the tarragon in there, and the garlic in there. It's going to be getting stronger, so I don't cure it as much. There's such a fine balance between getting the flavour right, and I'm obsessed with getting duck confits right. I have that dish on in the Palmer menu at the minute, and I've done it for different events over the years, but that's it. Duck confit, salt fried sirloin steak, and a ginger vanilla bean creme brulee for me. What about you?
And what are you going to be drinking, Trail Dirty Sock?
Do you know what? Sam Adams beer.
Oh,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, give me 11 or 12 bottles of Sammy Adams and I'll go down. I mean, we're going down with a ship, right?
We do recommend to drink responsibly, as always, just in case there's any.
I was holding back here.
I live on a second course.
Yeah,
a good few bottles of
just
Sammy Adams.
Just ourselves. Sam Adams.
I don't want to feel Armageddon. I want to go down numb. Too much, was it?
No.
Okay, bottles of beer.
Sounds like a good night out.
These two pricks judging me in here for drinking 12 bobos. There you go.
You didn't have to bring him into the studio.
Yeah, what are you eating?
What
do you hear this now? It was going to get all fucking caviar. If I hear truffle or caviar out of your Donna Mead head, I'm leaving the studio. Yeah. I'm leaving the studio.
No, here, there's a little bit of an undercurrent there to what he was talking about. A few weeks ago, we were invited down to eating a restaurant down in
Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah, called Dede. There's a guy cooking down there, Ahmed, and he's 2 Michelin stars, right? And we went down there with a supplier a few weeks ago to eat caviar, and we had 14 courses. Every course had caviar in it, right? So there was me and another couple of chefs at the table, and your man here got an invite and never accepted it. So then, between the 3 or 4 of us at the table, we photographed every single thing that landed. Every one of us sent it to
But I forgot to reach out to him. Like, and I'd been on the phone to him with you trying to organise a day in here. And he's like, well, I'm travelling Thursday. I thought, oh my God, he's travelling. That man goes nowhere. I was like, I never get nosy. I'm like going, I always say to Annette, goes, you're far too nosy. We keep asking people questions. So I'm like going, I'm not going to ask him where he's going. That's none of my business. If he tells me, he tells me. Had I have asked him, the big invite for one of my best buddies and all these other chefs that are great friends of mine, I looked at it. I'm up to my eyeballs at the K Club. I'm like, I'm far too busy. But I was like, oh, wow, a 14-course caviar dinner in a 2 Michelin star restaurant while the sun splits the stones in Baltimore. Sounded like a fairly good way to spend a Wednesday, right?
Stinger.
And I just said, I was too busy. And then I'm on to him the next day, and he goes, are you not at this dinner? And I went, at what dinner? He goes, this caviar feed down in Didi. And I went, oh, no. No, 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 no. Is that what you meant when you said you were trapped? I said, no, please no. I was like, don't tell me you and Ed Cooney from the all the boys, all my buddies. We're in the car going
down. Have you
down.
Been down there? In
Baltimore is beautiful.
We stood out after.
I mean, it's a kip.
It was beautiful. After we ate this beautiful lunch, we stood out the front. You probably know the name of the bar. I can't remember the name of the bar, right out the front. We had we 2 pints of Guinness to finish off the evening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Similar to Gary's way that he'd finish off his. So, no, for me, if I for a debt row meal, I would start off with some seafood. So, like, a Freedom Air some oysters, some scallops, and I would probably say I'd want to eat a ribeye steak. But just
you were probably 25 the first time you saw a scallop, were you?
I was probably, or an oyster. For main course, I would have a Dover sole.
Oh,
absolutely, yeah. Go with Dover sole.
Yeah,
and you don't see as many of the big ones
served tableside at the K Club as one of our go-tos.
Exactly.
World class.
Do you know? Yeah. And that lunch we were at together just recently, Richard Corrigan was sitting beside me. And he was telling me about one of his favourite things to eat, and I agree with him, is a Dover sole.
Yeah.
And to finish, anything that has the flavours of a Black Forest Gatto, I absolutely love. And growing up,
funny, I don't like cherries, but I love a Black Forest. I just moved the cherries to the side, you know.
No, I love a Black Forest Gatto. It used to be my birthday cake growing up. My mum always bought.
Yeah, Jesus, I remember. Like, I would have been poor at making the sponges and all that, but for graduation day at college, I was brilliant at icing work and piping work and the chocolate shape, so I could do all the decorative stuff really, really well. And I always remember the first graduation. The students make all the cakes for all the parties that are at the college. But I always remember being told, like, you need 900 of these, like, chocolate things. And I was like, geez, I don't know if I can make them. And then I got good at it. But
No, you would have been decorating.
Yeah, well, you would have been decorating like 50 Black Forest Gattos. But then your career goes on. And I'm like going, like, I haven't seen a Black Forest Gatto in I don't know how long, too long. Like,
yeah, we had one on the menu recently.
It's like a stroganoff. There's loads of stuff that's disappeared off menus.
That was like that chocolate and Kirsch cherry and the mascarpone cream. It just works.
Yeah, class.
Yeah, my pastry chef does one where he does a mascarpone mousse on the bottom, and then he puts the Kirsch cherries in it, and then he makes these wafers out of the sponge and the spits of sponge. Anyway, those flavours is what I want to finish with. And then I suppose you'd have to have a bit of cheese then, wouldn't you, right at the end, if it's your last supper. So, yeah.
That Ed, all sounds, listen.
Ed, what are you going
I
for?
I cannot on, follow. Ed. We've had this conversation before. It's a soda bread.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, my nan's soda
bread.
Oh,
yes,
a fresh egg. With the hen itself looking in the window going, you've taken that already.
That only came out of my arse 10 minutes
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, still warm. There's a tear in her eye as I'm cracking it open. Yeah. And then the real butter, and then let the egg melt the butter on top. Honest to God, it's like one of those Bisto Kids moments. I just go back to those days. It is, to this day, the nicest thing I've ever eaten in my life. So that would be the way I'd finish it.
There
fresh soda bread, fresh from the oven, proper Aga oven, 2 boiled eggs, a little pinch of salt, real butter.
Out to Sally Gale.
Good luck.
Nothing better. I think his one wins.
Yes.
With 12 bottles. Of Sally.
just to ruin it.
There you go. Okay, well, look, it's great to be back. The crack was good, as we knew it was going to be. And look, make sure you tune in next week. And for anybody that's enjoying the pod out there, don't be afraid to give us an old like and a follow. We have a new Instagram page that's going to be going up as well, so give that a follow. Share it with your friends. They're telling us here in Go Loud that the best way to get more listens and likes is to make sure that our listeners are sharing it around with your friends. So look, great to be back. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud sounds better with us.